This is Life I Swear, where we share stories and reflections from Black women about trials in their lives that have helped them heal, connect, and process. Every week, we hold space for storytelling that both challenges and inspires us to be good to ourselves. I'm your host, Chloe Dulce Luvueso. Black women and girls deserve access to healing. Healing that will impact generations to come. There is one organization that I love that is showing up for Black women and girls in unique and powerful ways, the Loveland Foundation. Through fellowships, residency programs, listening tours, and its therapy fund, which provides financial assistance to Black women and girls seeking therapy, the Loveland Foundation contributes to both the empowerment and the liberation of our communities. I love to see us collectively commit to our wellness, and by simultaneously supporting each other, there is power in community. To donate to the Loveland Foundation or to explore other ways to give, visit thelovelandfoundation.org. Hi friends. Have you ever met someone for the first time and instantly cared deeply for them, like you'd known them for years? This has been a recurring experience in my life, but especially in recent years through this community that I continue to build. I was connected to Kenda Fields through a mutual friend. When I say we cried the first time we talked, it left me speechless and in deep thought about this new connection. The story of Kenda is unique and powerful and lies alongside the stories many women have of second chances and of the mysteries, divisions, and unity that decorate our family experiences. The voice of Kenda is equally unique and mirrors the duality of so many of us. To both hold fear around vulnerability and to confidently know the possibility of its healing powers. I'm so proud of Kenda for sharing a piece of herself. And if you listen to her recount her truth in this episode, you too will understand why this new connection penetrated. Kenda, thank you for bringing yourself to and through this storytelling. I do appreciate you.
That conversation really, it wrecked a lot of things for me, but in the best way, because it really caused me to just be truthful. And like, since we've talked, I've been trying to be more vulnerable because I was just like, I'm losing out on holding so much stuff in. And I feel it like in my body sometimes. And just talking to you allowed me to like let a lot of things go. I shared some stuff with my therapist, my sister, my admins, you know, because there was even like work that I was just like keeping to myself and not like asking for help. And it's just, your book is just so powerful. And it's really like the blueprint for Black women to be able to find peace in their truth. That was like the biggest thing for me. So I just wanted to tell you that, like, that really just like made it like, what are the areas that need to be exposed so that I can be free from them, you know? So I wanted to share that with you.
Thank you so much for that. Someone else described kind of just this work and these conversations we're all having, including in the book, but as making space for vulnerability without the doom.
Yeah.
You know, this sense of doom that kind of hovers over us when we are feeling like the story is too daunting to to crack ourselves open. But I'm wondering, what was your household like and how did it shape your relationship with vulnerability, if it feels like now in this season of adulthood it's feeling new?
So I have pondered this question a lot. I feel like our lives really started, and when I mean us, I mean like my mom and my sister, after my parents separated. We went from like a suburban setting, you know, having a car, to like a city type town setting. And it was like a culture shock. first. We went from having a little bit more money to not having as much. And so my mom was really good at like finding free activities for us to do. So like I always say, even though we didn't have a lot of money, we had like rich experiences living in the DC area, being able to go to like the Smithsonian and the Kennedy Center for like the free events that they would have. My mom was like really heavy in the church. So there would be like a lot of like little receptions and things for like violinists. And I just remember it. But one of the things that I think the thing that really shaped that time was that we had to present a certain way. And I remember distinctly, we were on a train trip to Pennsylvania to see my grandpa. And he told us like how we have to look a certain way. Like people will not treat you well if you don't look like you have your shit together. And like, just remembering like, what does that mean? Like, I like my clothes. I think that I look pretty cool. And he like took us and got us like new clothes and all of that. And that really kind of informed the way that I presented myself. Like, I have to present well, I have to talk well, I have to speak well. And if not, you know, there is some doom behind this. I didn't really know what would happen, you know, if I didn't do that, but I knew that it was like super, super important. So I think my relationship with vulnerability pretty early was that you can't be vulnerable. You can't show, you have to look good, even if there's not like a lot of food in the refrigerator, even if, you know, like you're really struggling with things with your family, you present well and you don't tell anyone anything. And we didn't have any like physical abuse or anything, but I feel like that in a way, like in retrospect, was a little bit, I think I saw it as like mentally abusive because I wasn't able to share my truth or ask for help when we needed it. There was times where I think I did share some information with, I was in this group called Pathfinders. It's kind of like a Girl Scouts. And we were working on turkey boxes, like to give out to people on Thanksgiving. And I remember looking in the box and being like, man, I would love to eat this food. Like, this looks so great. I'd love to have this. And so I had mentioned to someone at the Pathfinders program, like, you know, I would love to have one of these. Like, this is something that me and my sister would need. And someone had come by like maybe like a few days later to drop it off. And my mom like refused the package. And I was just looking at her like, we need this, you know, this is something that we need, but she didn't want it to get back to the church that we were needy people because she had presented a certain way. And so that would kind of like mess up the mask. And so that was also a defining moment for me as well. It's like, if you need help, if you're drowning, like you don't let people know, you figure it out. In some ways that was helpful. You know, I'm very resourceful now, you know, I can take a little bit and make it a lot. And so I think that that's like one of my superpowers. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when I am drowning, and I'm learning this now, it takes me almost, you know, near death, you know, mentally actually reach out and ask for help. And that's something that I'm trying to like unlearn and know that like, you know, there's nothing bad that will happen if you share your truth. There, you know, people may take it different ways, but like, you're worthy of being able to acknowledge the dark areas of your life.
That's powerful. And so I'm wondering, while it wasn't okay to share your needs outside of your family to the public and community, what was vulnerability like intimately between you, your mother, and your sister?
Wow. What was vulnerability like? I think that there wasn't a lot of vulnerability even within the house. It's like we were housemates, but not really. We didn't talk to each other that much. There's a defining moment that me and my sister talk about a lot, and it's something that we're rebuilding now. But we had a situation with my father and my mother. There was like, it was a domestic violence situation. I've always downplayed it, and so I'm just going to call it what it was. It was a domestic violence situation, and the police had to come. And I remember the exact moment that I just like turned my back on my family in a way and my sister, because it was too much to comfort her. And it was too much because I didn't know how to comfort myself. So the only thing I knew what to do is just like cut that off, just cut it off. And she, like the way that she describes it is just like, you know, my eyes just kind of went blank. And it was like, it was a crossroads that we have just now kind of brought the crossroads back to us. Or like brought ourselves back to each other. But yeah, there was not a lot of vulnerability in our family at all. We were just three separate people just like living together and just doing their own thing. I remember I could not wait till I could get a job so that I could like do my own thing, get my ride on bus pass and like, you know, make money and buy shoes and clothes. I remember the first set of clothes that I got a jean jacket and I got Nike Dunks. And I was so happy because I was like, I can go to school now and people will know that everything's okay. You know, now the bus pass is a badge of honor because when we moved from the suburbs to the city, well, it was Tacoma Park, Maryland. We moved there, we didn't have a vehicle. And so I remember like crouching in the corner because I didn't want people to know that I was taking the bus because up until that point, you know, having a car meant that you had money. And not having a car and walking and using the bus, I didn't want anyone to know. So being able to make my own money really freed me and allowed me to like shape how I wanted to look based off of the things that, you know, my grandfather had shared with me and my mom had shared with me that you don't tell people. So I kind of like shaped a look that I felt was presentable so that no one would worry about how I was doing.
That's so, I think it's interesting. I've seen parts of my family, many parts of my family on both sides where we're in the same quarters, but we are strangers that share the same space.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, as you were like almost orchestrating or creating this perception that you were okay, or, you know, that you wanted people to believe, how did that influence the relationships that you formed as a young adult?
Oh, yeah.
So, and I asked that because one of my friends, she shared with me and I was telling her about, you know, how I hadn't been honest and transparent with my father about certain things that he'd done or not done. And I didn't know and just how to navigate the relationship with this huge elephant in the room and not talking about it. And she made this clear, but it applies to all relationships, I think, too, is when there is an elephant in the room or when there are things that you're harboring and you're still in relation with people, it can't possibly be authentic relationships.
Right.
If you're not honest and you don't start from that place. And in that moment, I was like, you're right. It's not.
Yeah.
But I recognize how that plays out in other kinds of relationships as well.
Yeah, I think that that's so true. I feel, and I've been thinking about this a lot, especially in therapy, is like, what are some of those relationships that I tended to form? And I feel like the friendships that I have now are more truthful because I'm able to be a little bit more vulnerable and I'm able to like connect with people in a way where it's not, I think I saw it as trauma bonding, but now I'm like unraveling that as well because it's like you have a shared experience that you've been working through. Yeah. But going back to how it shaped my relationships as a young adult, I sought out women who had big families. Mm-hmm. I think about my child, my high school best friends. I had two high school best friends. I spent some time in California and then also in the DMV area. And I picked my friends based off of how big their families were because I knew how to schmooze and like, you know, get families to like me. So I was able to escape to my friends' homes to like, you know, kind of take some of what they had and, you know, feel like I had a family. And, you know, when they would take their kids shopping, they would take me shopping too. And I think that might've been one. I have a friend in particular that I'm thinking of, my high school best friend, where I was able to be more vulnerable than I had been up to that point. And she kind of like took me under her wing. And I often say that that was my first experience with love. It wasn't romantic, but just the things that she would do for me or the way that she thought about me and, you know, would just like nurture certain parts of me and, you know, give grace when maybe I did something that wasn't kind because I didn't know how else to navigate it. And really just like, it was really, really helpful for me to have that. And I think there was a part of me that understood that like, family units, every family unit is different, but the ones big families, there's something unique about big families where they don't necessarily need other people. Mm-hmm. Families are so big and they have their own ecosystem within their home and they're able to learn and grow together in a way and get that, you know, feedback. And it's just different. Mm-hmm. And I saw that early on. And like, even now, like one of my best friends now, her family is huge. She comes from a family of 8 and all girls. And wow. Just the every single woman in that family is phenomenal in whatever they do. And I don't know, somehow I was drawn to that. And that's kind of how I picked people.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting, because I grew up with a single mother as well. And I also lived with several families. And it was like an extended family that I had access to that the other side of my life didn't. Mm, yeah. And so it was almost escapism to be able to, you know, nestle on their couch or, you know, like break bread with them and feel like I could create a different reality. And it was a different reality. But I think there's so much to take away from learning how other people bond and support and connect. Yeah. Create their own insular world. And I think it's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And you take those things and you're like, well, this is what I want. You know, this is how, if mm-hmm. I have a family one day, this is how I want it to be. I want to go on family vacations. I want to just peel off, you know, $50 and give to my kids. I want to give them rich experiences. Cause there was another part where I would long for my mom still and like my family. Mm-hmm. We would go places and I'm like, man, I wish my sister could see this. You know, I wish this is something that my sister has. So there was also a level of guilt with that. Mm-hmm. I got to have more expansive experiences and, you know, go to beaches and just do things that we just did not have access to. And it felt like, in a way, like a little bit of survivor's remorse, mm-hmm. I would say, because it's not until, you know, now, as my sister, I think she just turned 30, is just now experienced it. She just went on her first solo trip, you know, and she just got to experience another country. And it's just like, you know, this is something that I was able to experience at a younger age. And if I had not cut that off, because I knew or I had the tools to be able to be vulnerable with my sister and take her along with me, you know, how would our lives have been different? So that's something that I think about a lot and something that I'm you know, working through in therapy because, yeah, it hurts.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I feel like even as a single child on my father's side, I have siblings, but I didn't grow up with them. And some of them didn't know them until adulthood. But as a single child, I didn't have, and it sounds like you can relate to this a little bit, but I didn't have, you know, that sibling who I always imagined would be a partner in the journey of life.
Yeah. It's
because we're experiencing life alongside each other. And as adults, I've thought it would have been nice to now, like, no one knows the context to my story but me. And that's what I, you know, have always even wanted, like my son to have a sibling so that his life at any point in time, someone can relate to his lived experience and know that journey and know the, like, feel completely understood by a peer partner. But now that you and your sister are together, I mean, or together as meaning you both are grown-ups.
Yeah, we are together.
Yeah. So how do you guys revisit, as she is blossoming, how do you both revisit your relationship having felt, looking back, maybe a little fragmented, or, you know, you're a little bit older than her, so she had some only child years to herself after you, but how do you kind of come back together and revisit what an intimate sisterhood looks like?
Wow. I'm so happy to share this. I'm so happy to be able to share this because it has been challenging, but it also has been like the most rewarding experience I've had outside of motherhood. And the reason why is because we have had to work through so much. To give a little bit of context, outside of like us being separated, we came together and realized that we lived two very different lives during the time that we were like separated. And one of the things that we realized is that our mom had a, you know, and I think this is normal. Our mom had like a separate relationship with both of us, but she also, this is the part that's not normal, is may have pitted us against each other. So we always had a narrative of each other where, you know, I thought she was bratty and then she thought that I just thought I was the best and that, you know, I could do no wrong. And we carried that with us into adulthood. So it wasn't until I actually separated from my husband and I moved in with her, which was weird because it wasn't even like we had gone from like not really speaking maybe like once a year to her being like, hey, I'm inviting you to your home, you know, as you transition, which I thought was just like super generous considering that we weren't really close. And during that time, we had a lot of conversations and I was like, wait, that happened? Or that happened, and we'd like share, we would like compare notes of like situations that we had gone through that are formidable and we thought we knew about, but we saw them completely different because we saw it through the eyes of the way that our mom kind of filtered it through us. And so getting over that and realizing like, you know, she's not the bad guy, I'm not the bad guy. Like the only thing that we have is the shared, like kind of shared experience. We have to use those things to come back together because we're not the enemy. Even though I feel like in a way we might've felt like we were raised in that way. And so just having a lot of hard conversations, tea has been like a huge come together moment for me. Just sharing tea, like, you know, making tea. My sister had this huge house when she was married and with this huge porch and we would just sit out there and just hash it out. And sometimes we would get mad and we would get angry, but we do this thing where we always say, like, especially when we can have a conversation without getting upset, usually it would be me, to be honest, because I'm just like, I have avoidant anxiety. So like hard conversations, don't want to have them. Like I'm working, you know, now through it to be able to say, okay, it is a clarifying conversation, not a hard conversation. We're just,
I love that.
Yes. Word to my therapist, because I like that little mind switch really, really helped me. So it's like, okay, on the other side of this conversation, there is going to be better days. So like, let's keep having these conversations. So it kind of went from us having arguments and not talking for 6 months to us having arguments and then 3 months to us having arguments and then a week. You know, and then now today, like we will just sit there and nail it, you know, and be like, okay, what's the issue? How are you feeling? You know, bringing in empathy and then just really trying to like understand each other. And it's wonderful. Like we're such complimentary people. Like, and I remember like the families that I used to be with, my best friend in high school, her and her sister were like a great example of how you can have, you know, fights and arguments and little disagreements, but you can still come back together and go hard for that person that you love. And I never knew how to bridge that gap. And I longed for it when I would be with my friends that, you know, were close with their siblings. And now we have it. We talk about, like, we say all the time, oh, we just broke another generational curse. Oh, we just elevated because we got through that, because it's very difficult to be vulnerable in those moments. Because sometimes it's easier to hold on to those truths or that narrative that you've had for, you know, 20 years. Like that's hard. That's difficult and challenging to unravel. And so I'm proud of us for being able to, you know, work through those differences and, you know, make sure that we're in therapy, make sure that we're talking to each other. Now we have Wednesday night family night with my family, my two daughters and my partner. And then Friday nights, you know, and so like anything, we're always thinking of her, she's always thinking of us. And it just really, the other day she actually said, you know, I actually feel like I'm actually a part of a family now. For the first time in my life, you know, not that I'm, you know, someone's just bringing me in, but I actually feel like, you know, I'm a part of something. And that like just made me feel so good, because that's what I've strived for, what she strived for. So even though our family looks a little bit different, you know, we're not close with our dad's side of the family like we'd like to be. All of our mom's side of the family, they're, you know, hella old, so we don't really know them. But that's even a place that I would like to explore as well, you know, is talking to those elders. Like, you know, I might have been looking at it the wrong way. There's a lot of history when you talk to your elders. So that's an untapped area that I probably need to explore.
Oh my gosh, so much here. Thank you for sharing that. I'm so happy. That makes me really happy to hear. how your relationship has evolved, and that you're just so intentional, and you name it and you claim it that you're breaking generational curses. And to that end, I'm wondering, you know, if you could have a conversation with your mother now, what gaps would you look to her to help you fill? What would that conversation look like?
Yeah.
If the barrier of vulnerability were not there?
I think I would probably bring my friend, like the moments that are stuck in my mind that like shape how I view her. I would just ask her like, well, what were you thinking during this time?
Mm-hmm.
What was your mindset? Because a lot of times, you know, I think everyone's truth is relevant because their truth is shaped by their experiences. Before, I used to think everything was black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm going through life, I'm realizing there's a lot of gray areas because there's things that you have to consider why people do the things that they do. A lot of people are protecting themselves, you know, by having certain behaviors. A lot of people are, you know, soothing themselves. Like there's a lot of different things. So I think I would just ask her why and like what she was thinking, what she was trying to do. And to give a little context, because I know you know this, Chloe, but my mom has aphasia. So, and what aphasia does is I think the frontal lobe or the frontal cortex, I don't want to use medical terms, but the area that affects speech and writing, communication is deteriorating. And it's a form of dementia. And so we went from her, you know, her being able to talk pretty freely to not being able to really verbalize outside of like grunts or like noises. And as, you know, she was a communicator her whole life. And as like, I have a communications agency and she had an editing agency when I was young. And so there's times where I want to talk to her, like, you know, how do you deal with clients? Like, you know, how did you deal with this? You know, how did you deal with being a single mother and running this business? What made you not want to get food stamps when we had nothing in the refrigerator, you know, nothing in the refrigerator to eat? I think about that often. You know, if I didn't have a job, there was times where my sister wouldn't have been able to eat, even though we were not talking to each other, not for real. I knew that she needed to eat something. So, you know, I worked at an ice cream shop for like 5 years in high school. So I would bring her like hot dogs and ice cream. Like that shouldn't have been my burden. How did we get here for something like that to happen, where mm-hmm. you're not even paying attention enough to know that there's nothing to eat in the refrigerator? And if you knew my mom and just like the way that she presents, everything that I'm sharing, I'm sure is just so really be upsetting to her, because mm-hmm. we've done well as a family masking the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we even, the lengths that I feel like she went to create this persona of a well-kept, well-traveled, you know, just wonderful, rich woman when we were anything but, is just, at what cost? Like, mm-hmm. 'cause at the end of the day, how did this help you? How did this help us? Those are the conversations that I want to have. You know, we made big moves. Like, you know, Georgetown has always been Georgetown. And my mom got a job one time to be like a chaplain in residency there, but she wasn't getting a salary, but she wanted to be known as, you know, this Georgetown woman. So we moved there, but then we don't have the things that we need. What led you to do those things?
Mm-hmm.
What made you think that was more important than your, you know, just peace of mind, and,
yeah,
you know, safety? That mm-hmm. those are things that I would want to say. And I know that I will be able to get those answers because my mom was a huge journaler. Like, she's been journaling since forever, and she has boxes and boxes of journals. And so I know at some point I'll be able to like dive into it. And I'm actually looking forward to that. I think it may turn into like my own project, because I'll be able to like understand in a way. And I'm thankful that she documented her life in that way, because then I can get some insight. And I know that some people don't have that option, whether because their parents pass or, you know, they're not able to talk to their parents or whatever the case may be. So I feel like my questions will be answered at some mm-hmm. point, even if it's not directly from her mouth, her written word will be here. So I'm excited to get into that once that time comes.
Oh my gosh. And when that time does come, that's another kind of milestone of breaking generational curses, when you understand the background of some of her choices.
Yeah.
And this is you documenting your own life. But I'm wondering, one question I have, and I'm just, I could ask a thousand more. This does resonate with me as well, just family looking different and finally feeling, you know, like you're curating your own family experience.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how has or how did or does your romantic relationship, your marriage, fill a void where your birth family lacked? Mm. And how did that make you feel either, you know, more settled or that there was a possibility of your own family existing in the way that you saw it or wanted to see it?
Yeah, that is a good question. I think I have to talk about two different things, because I think there was a point where I was forcing what I wanted and forcing what I saw the perfect family being, you know, based off of the things that I saw over the years. And now where we're at, where we're just in the state of being, we're just who we are and we're navigating life together. And anything that has to be forced just will never work. That's one of the things that I've learned. If you have to force it, if you have to push it, if you have to sell it, if it's not necessarily that everything will always be effortless, but when you have to force things to happen, it rarely happens that way. And so one of the things that I've had to do is just like that, especially with my husband and our separation, is just looking at that gray area again. I have my truth and you have yours. And the things that you did or the things that I did, why did we do those things? And let's talk about them. To be honest, one of the things that was really helpful, especially in my 30s, has been cannabis. It really opened up just my mind to be able to receive the information that years ago would have wounded me deeply. But just like understanding, like, where were you in your mind? And then having empathy and being like, whoa, you didn't want anything different than I wanted. We just had different ways about going about it. Mm-hmm. So how do we come together with our ideals about what a relationship is and make it work for us? Because you're my person. We already know that. And I'm your person and vice versa. So how do we navigate that? And that's just by understanding. I think of a lot of people, and I'm speaking for myself, but I think if we were able to put ourselves in another person's shoes, we can really understand a lot. And I think also in the age of social media, we are just exposed to way too many people's like ideals. And, you know, it kind of can make it hard to filter out the noise for yourself, like what you really want. Because if you're on, you know, the Shade Room, which I love it, so I'm not gonna like it or anything, but you know, if you're on the Shade Room and you're seeing, oh, you know, what would you do if this guy did this to you, and vice versa, it's just so much noise. It's like, what part of that is my truth and what I want for my life, or what we want for our family, and where we want things to go? So once we were able to do that with cannabis and with just like talking and just, you know, having those same hard conversations, because I kind of took the same strategy that I use with my sister, like, hey, we're having clarifying conversations here. I'm just trying to understand where you were there. It also allows a Black man, I feel, who, you know, sometimes aren't heard by the world the way that they should be, to have your woman be able to actually listen and not listen to respond, but listen to understand and empathize. And, you know, I think that is really, has been very, very helpful for us. Very, very helpful for us.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so the family is reunited.
Yes, we're reunited. And I even see how like my children are, like my daughter had like horrible attitude like way before her prepubescent years, like way before, and because she was heavily affected by our separation. And to just see my friends see her and be like, my goodness, she's so happy now, like she's just around, and it's just like, wow, we broke another curse. Because, you know, a lot of the things that my father and mother that I saw with them, I saw with us. And to be able to get around that and work through that for our family is so, it's just like, it's so remarkable to me. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care what anyone has to say about my relationship. What we have gone through war and we have come out and we are building a legacy for our family. And that's all I could ever want. So actually what I wanted enforced in the beginning, I got effortlessly just by listening and coming to an understanding. So yeah, we're together. We're all together now.
That is love. That is love. I love to hear that. And so I guess my last question is just generally, however you choose to answer this, as I think about kind of the themes of breaking generational curses, breaking up and getting back together, you know, revisiting and circling back to your relationship with your sister that is now beautiful. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about second chances?
I think there's always room for a second chance. I think there's always room. I think there's always a circle back moment, whether that is with a friendship, with a relationship, from a client perspective, anything is possible. I think, yeah, that I would just stop right there. I think second chances are available to us. I think we should expect miracles more often. Anything can happen. And I'm getting like a little emotional because I'm just like, I'm thinking about the time when I have a friend and she wrote something that was so powerful. And she was just like, flip through your journal pages and look and see all the answered prayers. And it's like, whoa, if you look through your journal pages, if you look at your Facebook statuses and, you know, from back in the day, there are answered prayers there. So there's times where you were someplace and it felt impossible to get to on the other side of it. And I've seen the other side, not of everything, but of a lot of things. So I know that second chances and miracles are possible because I'm living proof. I am living proof. I was thinking about that the other day, like, whoa, I am in the middle of a prayer that I prayed, you know, 5-6 years ago. I wrote this on a page and now I'm actually living it, you know? So I think one thing that I get from my dad, he said this all the time, if you keep living, you'll understand. I'm sure a lot of people's parents said that, or grandparents, but if you keep living, you'll understand. And that's how I feel about second chances. You may not understand why some of the things that happen, but with enough time, with enough reflection, with openness and vulnerability, you know, you will see the other side, it even when it feels like it's impossible.
And on that note, I will thank you. That this has just been so beautiful. And your perspective, informed by your experience, is so grounding for me. And so I appreciate you.
Yeah, I appreciate you for allowing this space for Black women, for myself, for your friends, just for women all over the world. It's so powerful the way that you have your view on vulnerability and sharing your truth. It's so freeing. And I'm so thankful that you showed up in your gift so that we could have this blessing of what you're sharing with us.
No, it is entirely, everything is for us, by us. And it's cyclical in that way, this love.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. And it's only made possible through, you know, the openness of you and other women to come together. And just, this is like soul bearing, and I don't take that lightly. So I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you. My hands are over my chest and I'm giving you love right now.
And I'm giving you love back.
Thank you for listening to Life I Swear. You can follow Life I Swear on Instagram. And if you haven't yet, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcast fix. And learn more at lifeiswear.com. I hope you join me next week for another episode. In the meantime, be well, friend.